It's good to see you this morning. If you would, turn to Judges chapter 17. Judges chapter 17. We've been talking this year about Bible basics, where life meets God, where life meets God. So if you've read through the book of Judges, probably you need to get some therapy, because it's one of the most depressing books in the Bible. And there's not a happy ending. When you read the end of the book of Judges, it ends just with a statement of which we have here on the board. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And what we find out is when everyone does what is right in his own eyes, it turns out to be the wrong thing. It turns out to be the wrong thing. And so that's what you have with the book of Judges. But what it gives us is it gives us a period of 450 years. Acts chapter 13 and verse 20 tells us that this period lasted for 450 years, and it is a period of which the statement is made in Judges chapter 17 and verse 6 that there was a time of which there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. This is not said as a reason for why every man did that which was right in his own eyes, that there was no king. And someone says, well, you don't have a supervisor and everybody just falls apart. It was meant to state that this is the time period. So most likely the period of Judges happened at an earlier time, and whoever authors this book is probably living during the period of the kings. He says, but I want you to know what it was like when there was no king, what it was like during that period. That's the time stamp. And they should have been ruled, though, individually by Jehovah. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, that was the time of which the Israelites said to Samuel, we don't want your sons to be our judge, to judge over us. We want to have a king so that we can be like the other nations. And, of course, Samuel is bemoaning the fact that they've rejected his sons. And God says to him in consolation, they haven't rejected you. They have rejected me from being their king over them. So all along, from the very beginning, when you think of the word king, you're thinking of the one that is ruling, the one who has power. When God created Adam and Eve, the very first people, who was their king? Who was their king? God was their king. He wasn't on the earth on some kind of throne, but when it came to the chief potentate, the mighty potentate that was over Adam and Eve, they were individually under the kingship of God, individually. And so sometimes when I leave the room and I see my kids or I see my adult children or their grandkids, I say, I'm leaving now. You guys supervise yourselves. As if I had to be there to sort of, you know, oversee everything that was going on. And if Dad's here, there won't be nonsense happening. And, wow, can we really supervise ourselves when Dad leaves? Can we you better believe you can supervise yourself. That is because your heart is guided by God, and that you have a conscience that says no nonsense is going to happen here, even though Dad's not here. Their idea was not that we don't have a king, so we've got anarchy. It's just chaos. We don't have a king. If we don't have good, you know, conduct by our citizens, blame God. We don't have a king. We don't have a king. God says, I was always your king. All you had to do is say, I'm going to please the Lord. If you please the Lord, all of a sudden you're pleasing your wife. I like the brother that said two people can get along in marriage if both of them love God more than they love anything else. They can get along in marriage. Why is that? Because God is their king. God is their king. If you please God, you can be at peace at work. Whoever your supervisor is, you can please your supervisor because you're serving someone greater than God. You're going to be honest. You're going to give, you know, an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, and you're going to treat fellow employees with dignity, all that because you're serving God. It wasn't because they had some kind of, you know, human relations, you know, policy, something that was going to keep everybody in line, and we can't have any cheating, nobody's going to be lazy here. It's all because we're serving God. God is our supervisor. God is our king. Even in the Proverbs, it says, if we please the Lord, we can be at peace even with our enemies. We can even be at peace with our enemies. And so the idea is that we have individually, we have dedicated ourselves to God. He is our king, and that's the way in which they should have lived. So when it makes the statement, Judges chapter 17 and verse 6, in those days there was no king in Israel, everyone did what was right in his own eyes, that wasn't the reason for people being evil. That was, of course, just a time stamp. It was a terrible period. It was a terrible period at this time. Judges chapter 2, again, in just a sentence of summary, He's saying this was horrible, and the reason why is because people forgot who God was. And Judges chapter 2 and verse 10, it says, when all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord, nor the work which he had done for Israel. When people don't know God, they will do anything. They will do anything when they don't know God. And so we see that a cycle begins in verse 11. Judges chapter 2, verse 11. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they forsook the Lord God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. And they followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were around, all around them. And they bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. They forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Ashtoreths. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, so he delivered them into the hands of plunderers who despoiled them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies all around, so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. Wherever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for calamity, as the Lord had said and as the Lord had sworn to them, and they were greatly distressed. Verse 16, nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges who delivered them out of the hand of those who plundered them. Thus the name of the book, Judges. He brought deliverers so that they would no longer be plundered by their enemies. Verse 17, yet they would not listen to their judges, but they played the harlot with other gods and bowed down to them. They turned quickly from the way in which their fathers walked in obeying the commandments of the Lord. They did not do so. And when the Lord raised up judges another time for them, the Lord was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For the Lord was moved to pity by their groaning because of those who oppressed them and harassed them. And it came to pass when the judge was dead that they reverted and behaved more corruptly than their gods by following other gods to serve them and bow down their own or from their own doings nor from their stubborn way. So here's the cycle. The first of which, they would forsake the Lord with idolatry. Secondly, God would bring oppression in, allow them to be plundered. Then they would cry out to the Lord. They would cry out to the Lord, we're in distress, please, we don't like this, we're sorry, save us, Lord. He would give them deliverance by judges, examples such as the judge Deborah or Gideon and Samson. You remember Samson? Then the land would have rest. And then it says they would return to idolatry and start the same cycle over. So as you read through the book of Judges, the reason why of which I said you probably will need therapy is because you're saying these people are slow learners, very slow learners. You see this cycle, recycle over and over again. And these individuals continue to not learn their lesson. They're saying, why do these people like to suffer? Well, it's because of the temptation. The temptation to, after things are going well, to forget God. To forget God. To forget the good works of which he has done. And to think that we have something else as our provider. Something else as our empowerment. Something other than God. And so that very cycle of which he says repeated itself over and over and over and over again. He says, forsaking the Lord, then they would be oppressed, then they would cry out to the Lord, save us, then they would be delivered, and then they return to the very thing of which they'd done before. By the way, this is not unique to the period of the judges. This happens all the time with people. You're like, when will they learn their lesson? Some people never learn their lesson. They say, well, they better learn their lesson. Well, sometimes people just never do. They never do. They go to their grave having not learned their lesson. If we say they'll just have to learn, well, they don't. They can just suffer the consequences forever. And they should have learned, but some don't. And so we could stop the sermon there, but I want you to look at one chapter, and that is Judges chapter 17. It's about a man named Micah, and he was an adult son. His mother is brought into the story. We start in chapter 17 and verse 1. It says, now there was a man from the mountains of Ephraim whose name was Micah, and he said to his mother, the 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you and on which you put a curse, even saying in my ears, here's the silver with me. I took it. And his mother said, may you be blessed by the Lord, my son. So when he had returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, I had wholly dedicated the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son, to make a carved image and a molded image. Now, therefore, I will return it to you. In these first two or three verses, what you see is this. He's a thief. Micah is a thief. He steals from his own mother 1,100 pieces of silver. And so someone says, oh, big problem in that house, big problem in that house. All I want you to see is, yeah, there's a big problem. Two different stories we have here at the close of the book of Judges, which simply show how corrupt these people had become and how they had become very separated from God and basically nothing sacred. Judges chapter 19 is the other one where there was an assault and a murder of a concubine. And I'll let you read that story on your own. But basically a man and his concubine, here's a master and his concubine, they arrive into a city and he can't find a place to stay. Nobody will take them in. An old man wanders in off the field, says, you can stay at my house. I demand, stay at my house because this city is evil. You don't want to be out on those streets after dark, kind of like Colorado Springs. You want to be in a safe house, okay, behind locked doors. And, of course, then the people of the city pressed upon the city like in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah at the house of Lot and said, we want that man that just came here. We want to know and abuse this man. And so they put the concubine out there, and the city then assaulted the concubine. She was left there. She died as a result of her assault. And then the master comes out, and he says, what have I got here? Okay. He takes that deceased concubine, this woman. He takes this woman and he dissects her body and sends 12 pieces of her body to each of the 12 tribes of Israel and says, this is what happened here in Gibeah. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? And his brother, Melvin Curry, said he sent those pieces COD, casual on delivery, responded, pay up. In other words, show up and let's show this tribe in Israel this is not going to happen. But the question is, how could something like that, which was first shown to be in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, how could that happen in the Israel of God? Now they responded in big time. In fact, they nearly wiped out the tribe of Benjamin, nearly wiped them off the face of the earth, saying, this shall not happen here. You don't even deserve to live. And by a thread, they still existed. And later, the Apostle Paul was of the tribe of Benjamin. So we see that they did survive. But the whole concept is this. You have two different stories here, and the one of which we're going to focus on is Micah. But you have two different stories here that give us a glimpse into exactly how low can you go? How low can you go? As a result of everyone did what was right in his own eyes. So as you read this in Judges chapter 17, and it's describing what's happening with Micah. Here's a man that steals from his own mother, and then he returns it. And then she says something really bizarre. She says, well, I put a curse on it, but now I'm going to pray the blessing of the Lord upon you. She just ignores the curse she placed on that. Cursed be whoever got this because it won't reach its intended purpose, these riches. And now she says, no, I want this to be a blessing because I've got something else going on. This woman, she is... She's an unstable woman, and the son is a thief, and she says, this was purpose so that it might be a blessing of the Lord, and now it's going to be a blessing of the Lord, so what I'm going to do with it is this. I'm going to take some of that money, we're going to build idols. Let me tell you, that's not a blessing from the Lord. You can't reconcile this. You're saying, do what? But they weren't approaching it that way. They're like, wow. We just made friends. We're at peace with each other. The son returned the stolen goods to his mother, and now they're going to make an idol, and they'll receive the blessing of the Lord. It doesn't work that way. It does not work that way. And she says, now I'm going to give it its intended purpose so that it can be, of course, a blessing of the Lord. And let's build an idol. Verse 4. Judges 17, verse 4. Thus he returned the silver to his mother. Then his mother took 200 shekels of silver and gave them to the silversmith, and he made it into a carved image and a molded image, and they were in the house of Micah. To have an idol in your house as an Israelite, it was an abomination, an idol. Remember the Ten Commandments? First, that you would not bow yourself down to any other gods. Secondly, that you would not make any graven image. Why? God says, because I'm a jealous God. I don't share my throne with anything or anybody else. And here they have, as Israelites, they have this idol in their house. Verse 5, the man Micah had a shrine and made an ephod. An ephod was like an apron that the priest would wear. But now he makes himself an ephod and the household idols. And he consecrated one of his sons who became his priest. Now, the tribe of Ephraim, they weren't priests. Who was the priest? It was the tribe of Levi, right? They became a priest to an idol. This all sounds very empowering. Verse 6, in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. I think that statement is made there, and it's made as the last verse in this book, Judges. But I think it's made right here simply because if you have an Israelite who's a casual reader, he's like me. Say, what? What are these people doing? And he says, well, you got to remember, in those days, there was no king, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. So you're kind of explaining why they're doing what they're doing. It's sort of like when we find people on earth today that are uneducated, very uneducated, and that's not in some third world country. Sometimes that's right here in Colorado or maybe on my street, okay? And we're saying, why are those people doing that? Well, they don't have much education. That's just kind of where they're at. You've got to understand where they're at. I think that's the sort of statement we have here in Judges chapter 17, verse 6. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And this is where they landed. Verse 7. We go to the next section, of which I call Micah the superstitious idolater. Superstitious. Verse 7, now there was a young man from Bethlehem in Judah of the family of Judah. He was a Levite and was staying there. The man departed from the city Bethlehem in Judah to stay wherever he could find a place. There he came to the mountains of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, as he journeyed. And Micah said to him, where do you come from? So he said to him, I am a Levite. He says, a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I'm on my way to find a place to stay. So Micah said to him, dwell with me and be a father and a priest to me, and I will give you 10 shekels of silver per year, a suit of clothes, and your sustenance. So the Levite went in. So here's the Levite that says, I'm on a trip. Basically, he's a runaway. Levites were all assigned to their particular areas. I think there were 48 cities of the Levites among Israel. They didn't have their own land. They didn't have their own boundaries. So they lived among all the other tribes. But this guy's a floater. So something's happened. He's burned some bridge down there in Judah. And now he's up here in Ephraim. And here this guy says, you know what? I like the idea that I'm going to have a Levite as an employee. And so he becomes an idolater, but I call him a superstitious idolater because now he's kind of become a plural theologist. He believes in a plurality of gods. He likes this idol, but he thinks, you know, these Levites, they serve God, and having a Levite in your corner is always a good idea. And it kind of reminds me of Bailey Smith. This was a guy that was the president of the Baptist Convention back in the 1980s. And he says, I just don't get it. He says, we always see these national conferences, how that they start, maybe Congress, the day in Congress, or wherever big official things are happening. They'll have a prayer by a Catholic, a Protestant, and then a Jew. He says, I just don't get it. I do. I get it. They're saying, we don't care who you're praying to and who you're praying through. We want to make sure we've got all our bases covered, okay? We want everybody's prayers, and we don't want to tick off anybody. And this is sort of how Mike is looking. He says, there's a Levite? Wow, that'll really enforce and empower everything I'm about. I've got all my bases covered. I can't believe on my staff I've got a Levite. You know, the Levites were the original priests of God, right, under the law of Moses. And so these people received an endorsement from the law, and they had pedigree. He says, I've got one of these guys as an employee. He makes him an employee. The idea of an employee was the idea that he will tell him and be a priest on the terms of the man, not on the terms of God. And a couple of places in the Bible, one of which was Ezekiel chapter 34, verse 2. He says, what your priests do is they feed themselves. Instead of feeding the sheep, they feed themselves. In other words, they are a hireling. Jesus said in John chapter 10, when he was talking about sheep that will steal God's, or shepherds that will steal God's sheep, and then, of course, referred to them the good shepherd who lay his life down for a sheep. But he says, you've got these other shepherds among you. They're just hirelings. What they're after is a paycheck. They will tell sheep what they want to hear. And you can shop preachers, you can shop churches, and you can get what you want to hear today, and people will deliver. And this is what Mike is doing. He just hired himself a Levitical priest, and the priest is someone that's going to deliver what he wants. Oh yeah, he'll give him what he wants. It's just all about superstition. There's two words in the scripture that refer to religion, one of which is the fear of a higher power, and the other is ceremonial compliance. The fear of the higher power is what the Apostle Paul said when he went in Acts chapter 17 and to the city of Athens. He says, I perceive that you of all men are most superstitious or religious. That's just a fear of a higher power. And they had the multiplicity of all these idols of which they worship. Micah is falling into that kind of category. He's just superstitious. He wants to make sure that his bases are covered. He's a compromiser. We continue reading then in Judges chapter 17. It says in verse 11, then the Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man became like one of his sons to him. So Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest and lived in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, now I know that the Lord will be good to me, since I have a Levite as a priest. He has compromise written all over this story. And that is that I want to have my idol, but I also want to have God with me. And the Levite comes in and he's buying into the same compromise. That's Micah. Micah the thief, the superstitious idolater, and then Micah the compromiser. We take these same points, and I want to go ahead and put them on the board in just a little different order. They're the same three points, but you'll see why I put them in a little different order. The first of which is Micah, who was the idolater. Micah is the man that's morally bankrupt. He's the thief. That's who he is. In 2 Peter chapter 2, the warning is given to Christians that you'll have religious leaders that come along and get us to buy into the same immorality. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12, but these like natural beasts made to be caught and destroyed speak evil of the things they do not understand and will utterly perish in their own corruption, and will receive the wages of unrighteousness as those who count it pleasure to carouse in the daytime. He says they are spots and blemishes, carousing in their own deceptions while they feast with you. Verse 14, having eyes full of adultery that cannot cease from sin, enticing unstable souls, they have a heart trained in covetous practices and are accursed children. So first off, he says, these are people claiming to be Christians. Claiming to be Christians, but what they're after is your wealth. They are after anything that is going to exploit you to their own pleasure. Anything to their own pleasure. When you look at religion today, and regardless of whether it claims to be Christian or not, what you see as a common denominator, those who do not serve God are self-serving. They are self-serving. So I was having a Bible study this last week, and a man asked a question. He says, well, tell me, what is the Catholic Church, and what is the Mormon Church? And then he says, what about the Muslims and all this? And as one brother put it to me about five decades ago, he said, when you boil it down, they're all in the same basket. They all want power on their terms and what they can get out of it in order that their life on this earth is going to be more comfortable. And so we talk about those things, and then you see all the corruption that's in religions that have abandoned God. All the corruption. It's about prestige. It's about power. It's about money. It's about, again, pleasure at the expense and exploitation of others. And that's what it's about. That's exactly what he's describing here. And so when people do what is right in their own eyes, they will sometimes even say, this is religious before God. This is religious before God. This does not represent God. This is men and women doing what is right in their own eyes. Now, the reason why I reverse the order, because the second point is also in the same passage. That's 2 Peter chapter 2. That's the point of compromise. So we continue reading 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 15. He says, they have forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. But he was rebuked for his iniquity. A dumb donkey speaking with a man's voice restrained the madness of the prophet. These are wells without water, clouds carried by a tempest, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. So he brings up Balaam. Balaam was a priest of God, but Balaam was paid by the king of Moab to compromise, to compromise. Can't speak a word against the Lord. Oh, no, I can't speak a word against the Lord, but I'll do this. I'll give you some advice that comes in a side door, which says send your daughters out to Moab, or send the Moabite daughters out to the Israelites and, you know, commit adultery, fornication, intermarry with the Israelites. When you have the Moabites intermarry with the Israelites, you'll be at peace then, because they won't go at war against their own family. So he was the king of compromise, the king of compromise. Compromise is terrible. Compromise is hand in hand with darkness. When Jesus was tempted by the Satan, by the devil in three different ways, the third of which was Satan said to him, if you will, in Matthew chapter 4, but one time, just but one time, bow down and worship me, all these kingdoms will be yours. Jesus did not compromise. He did not compromise. Compromise is akin to Satan. It's akin to darkness. And so what you have here is Balaam, who is a compromiser. He wanted to please God, but he also wanted to please himself. He was greedy. He got paid off by the king of Moab, and he then gave instruction. He gave counsel, if you will, that which would give the king of Moab that which he wanted. And then the third point, this time, is superstition. I referred to Acts chapter 17 a moment ago, of which the Apostle Paul came into the city of Athens and he saw all the idols. It said that he was stirred. I would say he was disturbed because of how many idols that he saw. Sometimes you just have to take a step back and say, I can't believe this. And that's what happened in Acts chapter 16 and verse, or 17 and verse 16. Now, while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw that the city was given over to idols. In chapter 17, verse 22, then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious. King James Version says superstitious. It's the word religion. Religion means two different things, either the fear of a higher power or ceremonial compliance. He says, I can see that you have a fear of a higher power. When it comes crunch time, you're afraid. And so you construct these idols. That's what you do. And that's what Micah was doing. So what kind of idols do you construct around you? Number one, you might resort to money. Number two, you might resort to friendships, acquaintances. You might resort to even the government. You might resort to your sim. Some people drown themselves in their bottle, right? I'm afraid. I got to get a drink. Give me a drink. And so they resort to those kinds of things. Those kinds of things become their god. That's an idol. That's superstitious. And someone says, what do you have? I don't know what I have, but I know that I've got my idol right here. I'm ready. And I'm upset. What they didn't have was God. They did not have God. And so it said, and that if you don't believe in God, it said that you won't believe in nothing, that you'll believe rather in anything. So I've seen several atheist debates, and it's sad because they really persuade many, many people to ignore God. And so the Christian will say to the atheist, you have faith in atheism. And the atheist says, don't accuse me of faith. I do not believe in anything. Let me tell you, the atheist has faith. He has faith in his system. He has faith in himself. That's what he has faith in. He has become his own God. That's what he has faith in. And then it's amazing how he'll utilize the very basic things of which we talked about, either his money or his community, his relationships, or his sin. He'll utilize all those things. Oh, he has faith in all that. That's how he exists, or she. They believe in something. Everyone is superstitious. Everyone believes in something. But Paul, in Acts chapter 17, he says, I want you to have fear, but in the one of which you don't know. And so as you see there in verse 24, actually in verse 23, the second part, he says, therefore the one whom you worship without knowing him, I proclaim to you, God who made the world and everything in it. He says, you need to have a fear of a higher power, but it needs to be directed towards the one who is the higher power. It needs to be directed towards that. Today, what we have in the 21st century right here in Colorado Springs is a lot of people that just have the mindset that just leave me alone. I can take care of myself. I like to make my own decisions. I certainly don't want anybody else meddling. Certainly wouldn't want it to be a preacher or some kind of church. And I can sort of understand that. We're thinking, I don't want human beings to meddle. But this is a case of which these individuals said, I'm going to do what is right in my own eyes. And coincidentally, they all landed at the same place. They all landed at the same place. So as you read in Romans chapter 1, and I put that as the title of this slide, as you read in Romans chapter 1 and see where these people landed, nothing has changed. Not anything has changed when it comes to where people have landed. Romans chapter 1 refers to those people who are ignorant of God, and therefore, verse 24, God gave them up to uncleanness in the lust of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves. What did they do? He says they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creator rather than the creature rather than the creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, where did they land? God gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use of what is against nature. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another. Men with men committing what is shameful, receiving in themselves the penalty of their error which was due. See where they've landed. You take a godless society, this is where people land. Verse 28, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful. In other words, Colorado Springs, Channel 5, the 6 o'clock news. They land the same place every time. Every time. Someone says, I want to make my own choices. I'm carving out, you know, some self-expression here. I'm going to be unique. And every time they land at the same place. It's always the same place. And so the statement that those who don't believe in God believe in nothing, they believe in anything, and it's always the same things. Always. It's the same things. It's not a good place to land. Without God, what is right is always wrong. Unless I be accused of a cliffhanger, Romans chapter 1 and verse 32, he says, who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, and not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. He says, don't buy into this idea that we're going to do what we want to do. Two people that become allies and form what is called a gang have said to themselves, we're going to decide what we're going to do. And that might multiply, and you might get a pretty good squad going before it's over with. And then they land at the same place every time. The concept is this: when it comes to Bible basics, where life meets God, that everyone who does right, what is right in his own eyes, does what is wrong. And the remedy for that, and we need to address that, is Proverbs chapter 1, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. How do you stop the cycle? How do you stop the cycle? And you're wondering, sometimes people, they binge on that which is evil. Then finally they said, well, I don't like where this left me. And then they wake up, come to their senses, and then 2 days later they're right back where they started. And you're like, where do we stop this? So he says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man. This is the whole of man. That's the conclusion of the whole matter. We turn to the Lord. Instead of doing what is right in our own eyes, we look at what the Lord has taught us. We look at what the Lord is and who he is. We see what his not only agenda is, but we see wherein hope lies. Wherein is the promise of God? Wherein is life itself? Instead of struggling in corruption and darkness and then trying to find a way to, you know, stay afloat in an evil world, we have life. We have that which is, as Jesus said, water which springs up from us, a well of eternal life, not depending upon those things that are around us and how we're going to navigate that, but rather how that we're going to know the Lord that's within us. That's how we stop the cycle. We can stop it. And, of course, we can please the Lord doing right, what is right, not in our eyes, but his. I'm through preaching now.